Woman, life, freedom, an old Kurdic feminist watchword, unites totally different people in Iran and worldwide. What does it stand for? Why is the movement relevant to us non-Iranian? And where are we standing in relation to it? 9 months ago, people in Iran went to the streets and started a battle against fascism, patriarchy, and corruption. The co-creation creates a space to discuss this topic interactively. Herzlich willkommen, very welcome at Content, and have a good time.
Hi everyone, thanks for showing up. Thanks Fusion for inviting us. We're going to go through a history of like how the oppressions are in Iran, how fascism is functioning. In the beginning, Khashi will present that, and then afterwards we would go through a briefing of history and also background of Janjian Azadi on its own. Then we'll have a short video, zooming out a little bit, and then we will discuss also what does Janjian Azadi mean for you. So I will pass the mic to Khashi so he can start with the first part.
Thank you. Hi, thanks for everyone being here. I have to say beforehand, all of this is a bit emotional for us, so in the middle of it, hopefully we will keep it a bit alive. First, I want to start with saying, like, where is Iran? Like, what is the country we are talking about? This is where Iran is situated. Afghanistan, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Syria, Iraq, Israel, Palestine, all of them are in this map. So this is the situation. This is the context of what we are talking about. This is the geographic location of the struggle. And the size of the country, almost twice the size of France and Germany combined, just to give you a bit of context. Very briefly, I want to show you the... Okay, it's always going between oppression, resistance, oppression, resistance. And there is a long history to that. 1910, I would say, like, is one of the... This country knows revolution. The last 120 years, this is the third revolution of the country. The first one, let's say in 1910-ish or so, the country decided enough with monarchy, so they started, people rose, there was a revolution, people started the constitutional monarchy. 40, 50 years later, there was imperialist powers in power. They were taking the control of oil reservoir everywhere in Middle East. The country decided to nationalize the oil. There was another uprising, the oil was nationalized. 40, 50 years later, the imperialists changed from UK to US, but still, we had monarchy and imperialism influencing the constitution. So there was the liberals, the left, the Islamists came together, overthrew the monarchs, and started the second revolution, so to say. The winner of that revolution was Islamic Republic of Iran. We grew up in that. We lived inside and under this system. And I want to go through like the felt sense, the real experience that we had of the type of fascism we faced. Of course, after the revolution, immediately after the war, we have a sense of fascism growing. 1 year after the revolution, 1979 is a revolution, 1981, 1980, the war starts. There is an 8 years war with Iraq. And that gave power to the Islamic Republic Revolutionary Guard, militia, military. So there is a war, of course the military start to gain power. So we lived under fascism and we lived under the influence of the military. War started and 1980 on, the last 40 something years, we have international sanction above us. Of course that influenced our life. And we are talking about 1980s, one thing happened in the world, and of course after the war, we felt the influence of it as well. Neoliberalism came. So there was all this type of economic intervention in the country that like brought in our life the real influence of capitalism, the brutal aspect of it, the neoliberal growing. Of course there was resistance. Of course we tried to push for a bit of reform, but that also like kind of was oppressed. You might have heard about Green Movement of the 2008, 2009, a bit before the Arab Spring. That was another peak into this movement of the people. But gradually moving on, economy is going down due to all of these lines that I'm showing. And economy is going down, the oppression is increasing, the power of the military is increasing, so there is more resistance. Teachers are striking, workers are striking, women are becoming more vocal about their right, and up until 2022 September, Jina Mahsa Amini was detained because of a lack of a proper hijab, and through the brutal detention of her, she was murdered. This wasn't the first time this happened, but this time Mahsa, the colonial name, Jina, is Kurdish woman. Woman, Kurdish, two oppressed group already we are talking about. After her death, and Kurds know how to do burial. Kurds say Shahid Namura. It's not that just the martyrs don't die, it's like we are not gonna let the martyr's name die, and this is the stone grave of Jina Amini. On top of it is written, Jina, dear, you don't die. Your name will become a code, a symbol. Few days later, the Jina revolution, the Jinjian Azadi, Zanzendigi Azadi started, and like everywhere in Iran, not just the Kurdistan part, people are shouting in the streets, Zanzendigi Azadi, and say her name, Jina Mahsa Amini. So it really became a symbol. Before getting to the woman life freedom part, I want to open up a bit. Like, what do we mean by fascism? It's a big word, right? It's a really heavy word, right? It always has three sides. There's an ideology part. In our case, what we lived under was the political Shia Islam. Of course, there is a military militia always together wherever you have fascism, and we had that. And there is a kleptocratic capitalism, money, power relationship to that too. But I want to go through a different history, the history of oppression, history of resistance. And of course, feminist revolution, we start with this. 1979, just a bit after revolution, the Islamists who gained power decided this cannot continue, we have to gain control of the body of anything that is not hegemonic body of a male. So hijab, compulsory hijab discussion started, and this is the image of then, 1979. And of course people didn't take it like easily, they went to streets, like there was like two, three huge demos organized by women to just, no, we are not taking this shit. And I wanted to show this. This is 1979, and it's like freedom of women is freedom of the society. This is the level of progressive revolution that ended up in such fascistic state. Fast forward 2017, another singular event that became universal, Vida Muwahed, went to the one of the crowdest square of Tehran, Inqilab Revolution Square. As simple as that, a unique act of performativity. Just took the scarf off, stood there, and just let the people pass by. Of course, it became universal. It moved from a singular act to a meme. People started to repeat the same act everywhere. Now, 2007, it's like a few years ago still. And the revolution starts, and the history, in a sense of the mythology, comes. People go back to the history and just call the mythology back. The object of the oppression, the hair, interwoven with the history and mythology of cutting the hair on the mourning of your past one, cutting the hair on the martyrdom of people. Women in Iran started to cut their hair. This is her mom, a Kurd woman, religious minority, went to the street and was shot to death. This is a image, 17-year-old, cut her hair on the gravestone of her mom, carrying the hair. This is not the end of it. We are not going to let this go. This is the face of the revolution. and of course, burning the scarf. Not just taking it off and putting it on a stick, but just people started to burn the scarf, and it's not just burn the scarf as a resistant act against the hijab. There is the stone of revolution in the hand of that woman. So this was the face of what we saw during the autumn 2022. And Gen Z, of course, I am 18, right? When I was going to school, these two photos of the Supreme Leader was up there, and we were like, nothing, nada. This was the level of oppression of fascism. This is the Gen Z. This is how they react to during the revolution. And they are 7 years old, running in the street after the school, 7 years old, and chanting Zan Zendegi Azadi. This is what the system of the oppression have to face right now. Resistance, oppression. And of course, they were not the only marginalized or oppressed group. We had the oppression of different minority groups. I know some photos are going to be a bit graphic from here on. This is Black Wednesday of 1979. Look there, southwest of Iran is where I would say a lot of Arabs live. And of course, we had a revolution, democracy. We need to be saying, we have something to say in this. We need to be part of this democratic organization. The central power sent troops to oppress them. And this is the face of militia, wearing KKK masks to go and like mass murder people, Arabs, in the streets. This is the Black Wednesday or the Red Wednesday of the Masha. Fast forward, 2019, the fuel prices rose, as you saw, the gilets jaunes and the kind of things that happened in France. The fuel prices rise, people go to street. People went to street. This is the same kind of, a bit further, another city in South Iran, the Arab city. And this is the type of oppression that they faced. They cornered, they sent troops to their own city. They cornered everybody in the marsh, and like 140 people were just machine gunned down there. A lot of bodies haven't been found yet. Oppression, resistance. 2 years after that, just two years after that brutal killing, we have the water crisis. Climate change is real, and we know that the marginalized group, oppressed group, are more influenced by climate change. That part of Iran has a serious, serious water problem. They are rich in oil, they are rich in water, but bad management and underdeveloping by the fascist regime, they have a real water problem. 2 years after the brutal oppression, they went to the street again, shouting that, I like this, I don't know if you see left down here, I like this one because it says, like, this is the level of understanding of the ecological crisis. It's like Karun is the name of the river passing there. It's like huge river, ships can pass through. A big Karun means death of Khuzestan. The province will die if this river dies. It's not about just water, you know, in this sense. Now a bit to the north, west, Kurds. This is, Kurds are living in Turkey, Syria, Iraq, Iran. They are a nation spread like all over the region. I'm sorry for the graphic image, look away. This is the rebellion of the Kurds, 1979 and 1980. Again, the fascistic regime who was setting like foot in the ground, sent troops. And I don't even know how many thousand people were murdered or executed, as you see. 1979, this is like one of the images that like me living there, it's just like stuck there. Marivan historic exodus. Oppression is there, they're killing people, there is fight between the guerrillas and the militia in the street. People decided, enough, you want to rule over us, rule over the buildings, rule over the city. Enough, out, exodus. The whole city left the city and went to the mountain. Just to show the fascists that like, you cannot continue doing this. And of course, after some peace treaty, they came back, but like, this is the level of solidarity that existed there. Oppression, resistance. And the imagery is a bit like 40 years after, but the imagery looks the same. 40 days after the martyrdom of Jinnah, commemoration ceremony, from all the cities and villages around, people went not to the street, to the roads, to go to the Aichi Cemetery in Saka to just commemorate the memory of the martyred one. And this is the real image of another city, Mahabad, but it's still Kurdistan. This is the real image of revolution. They were broadcasting the revolutionary progressive slogans. They were broadcasting this imagery, so that like the rest of Iran started to say that the revolution's eye and heart is Kurdistan. In this sense, this is like a bit southeast. Baluchis also are divided between Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Iran. And they were always underdeveloped. You know, underdeveloping is a nice word. I like it. It's like it's not just like we go to a rich nation. Of course, they are rich. They have mines. This is like this is the end of the. If you want to have access to open water, that is the port in this country. It's a rich nation. You underdeveloped them. That is the water situation there, and this is the school situation. This is not a typical school in Iran. 30 years ago, I went to a school which pretty much like. Look like a Kreuzberg school in Berlin right now, but this is 2023 right now in Balochistan, underdeveloping the periphery nations. And of course, the revolution kickstart, these people go to the street, there is a Friday, they are machine gunned down from the helicopter and everywhere. Since then, for the last 9 months, these people, after every Friday prayer, go to the streets and do the demo. And with this type of progressive banners, it's not just saying what's happening to us. It's like Baluchi share of Iran is denial, bullet, and execution, and that is so true. We have the highest rate of capital punishment per capita in the world, but it's not everybody. It's Baluchis, Kurds, Arabs, marginalized, oppressed people. And what I like is like. Analog Twitter, they sent messages to other part of Iran. In all demo, there is a message that is saying, hey, Kurds, we are with you. Hey, Turks, we are with you. So it's like there is a communication going on through this. And you see a bit of the image, right? It's like center, periphery, oppression of center to the periphery. It's not just different nations. It's also different religions. Most of these are Sunni Muslims, not Shia Muslims. And so there is another angle of oppression, that is oppression of the religious minorities. You see, the list of the fascism is like starting to take shape. 1983, execution of 10 Baha'i women. I don't remember why, who cares why, they just caught 10 Baha'i women, and like the youngest of one, 17-year-old, and they just murdered them. And oppression, resistance, and it's like fascism is written down in that country. If you're Baha'i, you can go to school. Of course, you get a lot of shit, but you cannot go to university. It's written down. Baha'is are not allowed to go to university. 1987, they started their own university. Wherever there is oppression, there is resistance. There is no internet back then. This is the website now. But they started their own underground university because, what, like we cannot get high education? So. Oppression, resistance, and of course, fascism doesn't like queer, doesn't like non-normative, right? I'm sorry for the imagery again. Aban and Khorshi, 2005, and I want to show another side of fascism, which is like these people were reported to gay living together. They were reported and executed. This complex relation of the living under and inside fascism to report people to be executed. But of course there was resistance. 1999, you know, there we are talking about 90 square movement. 1999, the first LGBT magazine came out, Human. And of course afterward there was like platforms after platform. So the society is resisting, of course, the group. And revolution kickstarts in 2022, and one of the groups that are like coming out is like queering the public space. You see everywhere now, it's like we are here. And not just facing the regime, facing the opposition of the regime, you have to deal with us. And they are organized. This was also surprising for me, they are organized. The first manifesto of this revolution didn't come from the workers, didn't come from the teachers, didn't come from the women organization, didn't come from the different nationalities organization. It came from the LGBTQI plus community to say that this is manifesto for the regime, for the opposition, whoever wanna be in the power. This is what we want. And fascism don't like left. What do you feel from this image? Like, where do you think is this? Few days after the war stopped, 8 years of war, and then war stopped, the peace treaty is signed, few days, maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks afterward, there is mass murder, mass execution of political prisoners in Iran. There are 2,000 to four, some estimates say 4,500, I cannot say lefties, it's like all different groups, but majority lefties are buried in this mass grave that you see here. And again, oppression, resistance, since then, every year, the imagery of you killed our sons, you killed our daughters, is being broadcast. Like, I grew up with the name of Khavaran, knowing that there is a cemetery that the lefties were killed and buried. So they just keeping the memory alive is one act of resistance. And of course, the last 10 years, lefties are starting to organize more. We have much more strikes, much more organization by worker, not the official worker unions, but the generally workers know how to organize themselves. And of course, they know how to do strikes when they see fit. I like this image. Teachers are organized also the last 10 years, I would say they're organizing very well. I like this because I'm also a teacher. So I like this because she's saying that, like, I'm a teacher, I'm here to teach my student that the rights are not, nobody's going to give it, the rights are to take. You have to fight for your rights. And I have to tell my students that, so I have to be in the street. And I, like, love every bit about that woman being in the street. And socialists, anarchists, feminists, us, we started to come out of our ideological solitude, I would say, and find each other, talk to each other, and organize around what we want. This is the graffiti coming, I think, October, no, November, I guess, somewhere, I don't know where, in Iran. And that is us in Revolutionary Estamai, Berlin, and the Salgan is one of the famous ones in Iran, which is like the roof, the book, and the wheat, power to the people. Like, this is what we want. You name other elements. These are the things that we felt, we really felt that we know from the elements of fascism in that country, but you can name other minority, marginalized, oppressed group, or groups under oppression. And this revolution, the last 9 months, of course, had a lot of bloodshed, martyrs, a lot of sad moments, a lot of suicide, a lot of execution, a lot of data you can dig up. You can dig up how many 500-something people were killed, 200-something were executed. You can dig up 100 of the killed ones on the street were kids, like literally like 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds, in few cases 9-year-olds. Kid, you can look at the map and see that all the, you know, it's not distributed. You have the Kurds, you have the Baluchis, and you have the Arabs there, and you have the Tehran, the center, but. This face, this guy is a Baluchi guy. This is the real face of the revolution. The people who died, who were killed, are these people. These are the people who just want to live, right? And I thought, like, maybe instead of just bombarding you with data, you just look at them. Salom mikonat zar, diom mikonat
سبز پیاد می رود قنچ سوار می رسد
سلام می کند سبز پیاد می کند سبز پیاد می رود قنچ سوار می رسد
چاک شده است آسمان غلغل ایست در جهان انبر و مشت می دمد صندوق یار می رسد
چاک شده است آسمان غلغل ایست در جهان انبر و مشت می دمد صندوق یار می رسد
رونق باب می رسد چشم و چراغ می رسد قلم کنار می رود قهد کنار می رسد
رونق باب می رسد چشم و چراغ
سلام می کند سر پیام می کند سبز پیاده می رود قنچ سوار می رسد
سلام می کند سر پیام می کند سبز پیاده می رود قنچ سوار
Okay, so now you have a brief of how the operation functioned in Iran, how it worked, how come we are here, and I guess you might have like some idea what Zhenjian Azadi et al. Is, what does it stand for, and what does it tell to you? So we thought we have Neda here. She has like a paper. Wearing this paper, Neda, do you have also the markers? Yeah, perfect. So, like, you can just put on this paper whatever comes to your mind, like, whatever you sense, whatever you feel, whatever you heard about Zhenjian Azadi. Any note, any message for us, for sharing, or how would you apply it to your daily life? Because I'm gonna now go through a brief history of Zhenjian Azadi. Can you hear me back then? Yeah, perfect. Thank you. Yeah, I'm gonna read this text. And like I said, it's a brief history where this comes from, where this term comes from at all, and how did it end up where it ended up, and Zhenjian Azadi came out of an active and living movement in Turkey, Kurdistan, moving to Syria, Kurdistan, Rojava, perhaps you've heard of it, and coming to Iran, Kurdistan. So before the autumn 2022, this term have already existed. It's not produced or created just last year. This influence was already there, and what is the context here in a region where oppressing dictators and imperialist powers are raiding the region? Zhenjian Azadi was a light of hope, especially in Iran, Kurdistan. The image of autonomous Rojava Kurdish women were spreading through the region and the world, but the Rojava movement itself was very much influenced by Turkey, Kurdistan, and the Kurdish movement there. A left Kurdish party named PKK, basically, and they were in Turkey and they were fighting the system, both theoretically and also on the ground. So there were all these relations, people and ideas passing borders in the context of Turkey. There was also this problem that the hegemony and the nation state was neglecting the existence of Turks, Kurds at all. So this is also a colonial, it has a colonial aspect to it as well. The movement was basically facing various aspects of fascism. So it was fighting capitalism, the system of local and global exploitation. In early conception, the movement was very much also a Marxist-Leninist one. From 1995 on, it turned more and more to an anarchistic movement and more grassroots, in one hand going beyond the idea that worker parties might be the revolution, in the other hand going beyond the idea of a bigger Kurdistan, so basically a Kurdish country even maybe. The movement focused more and more on a local deliberative radical democracy, starting from small villages and moved to bigger cities to fight colonial or centralizing powers of nation states. So, so more towards anarchistic approaches, And the other angle of change was that by further engagement of women through the late 90s and 2000s, women faced the patriarchy even within their societies and their organization. And they realized that they have to organize even in their fight one more time with more women organizing for themselves, and gradually and over time changing the main ideology and political perspective to put emancipation of power, emancipation of women and fight against patriarchy and for equality as one of the other cornerstones of the movement. And besides that, it was moving from a Marxist-Leninist approach to more anarcho-socialist approach and toward a more feminist movement. This also meant a different emphasis on focus on the ecological aspect of living, so caring more about nature and how the resources are being taken. The slogan Jan Jan Azadi, or Woman Life Freedom, highlighted the eco-feminist anarcho-socialist revolutionary movement. Since then, from 2011 on, the Kurdish women movement and their Jinjian Azadi slogan have been passing around the world. In September 2022, Jina Mahsa Amini, a Kurdish woman, dies under the violent arrest by Iranian moral police due to not wearing hijab in accordance with the like of the government. So at her state femicide public funeral in a cemetery in the small town of Sagres, people chanted Jan Jan Azadi. And on her gravestone, like Khashi pointed out, it was written, Jina, you will not die, your name will become a symbol. In less than 48 hours, people were shouting Jan Jan Azadi all over the Iran, and also it reached us to Europe in a way. Jan Jan Azadi, a revolutionary slogan without borders, we think it is. Because first of all, these three words, they are not separate. You cannot put them aside and say it means something. So they come all together, and it's a solid composition. So woman is a symbol of whatever is oppressed by the patriarchal system. It can be, it can stand for women, it can stand for LGBTQIA plus community, disabled people, the oppressed and the marginalized group. And life is standing for anything related to life, from the ecological aspect of this is our home, not a resource, to the economy aspect of we live here together and deserve a decent and fulfilling life. Freedom from the oppressions and towards self-determination. And basically you put any words off of this combination and it's not complete at all. The power of this slogan is that this trio composition as a revolutionary slogan can be a candle showing the light in any context. It is generative, it's a negative composition, negating patriarchal capitalism, and at the same time, it stays positive composition, lighting the way towards something, a revolutionary future. So, one solution, revolution. Now you know a lot about this revolution and different aspects of it. Its history, the background, its intensity and the violence, the level of violence happening there, and its identity. We thought it's not irrelevant if we also share with you some of our concerns. Of course, we have some concerns, like the opposition is not really, sometimes the opposition, like there are different groups from spectrum of right to left, and they might have struggled to go through this path of like now everyone have to work together, everyone have to be united, but there are definitely people from different ideologies and thoughts, ideas. But apart from that, there is also another worry that is for us kind of something to keep having an eye on, and that is the influence of the other countries. So we will zoom out a little bit. And as we are living in an interconnected world, I think it's also important to mention that there is this powerful tool that there is this powerful weapon that countries use to get rid of the leaders they don't like, leaders of other countries, and it is called a coup, coup d'etat. It means coming in and pushing a government out. That happened in many ways, but now we want to go through only a few coups out of many factual major coups that United States, for example, have successfully done over the years. We picked these two because basically US is always ahead in numbers, so it had like almost 30 successful coups, but we just took these two to just show you how this coup just could work. And we're gonna watch a video about it, and I hope you enjoy. And it's more of the influence that the US had in this region. So one of them is the coup that they did almost 40 years ago in Iran, interfering, and the other one goes to Afghanistan, how they just like entered and changed the game. So we could just watch it together now.
So this gets us to Iran, 1953, where Iran had just elected a new star politician, Mohammad Mossadegh. He rises to power believing that Iran must take back control of its most valuable natural resource, oil, which at the time was completely controlled by a British company called the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company. We know it today as BP. Mossadegh is done with this. Let's kick the British out and take back our oil. But like the US, Britain is not happy with Iranians trying to take back their resources. So they warn that if they do this, there will be consequences. So the British catch a quick meeting with the CIA's Middle East guy who was passing through London, and they pitch him on this idea. Let's throw out Mossadegh. The CIA's like, okay, and they kind of sniff communist vibes on Mossadegh with this big desire to nationalize Iran's oil, or at least they tell themselves they do. So the CIA agrees, and they secretly send this guy to Iran. He's the Middle East bureau chief, Kermit Roosevelt. He's like in his 30s. Oh, and yes, he is the grandson of another big coup guy, Teddy Roosevelt, who I have gone into in other videos. Roosevelt sneaks into Iran and is given $1 million taxpayer dollars to use, quote, in any way that would bring about the fall of Mossadegh. So now there's American CIA agents in Iran secretly trying to overthrow the government. And it's a rocky start at first with a bunch of failures. But they start using their money to get traction, bribing politicians, religious clerics, and other leaders to say divisive and controversial things about Mossadegh. They hire locals to stage attacks against religious leaders, making it look like they had been ordered to do so by Mossadegh. But really, they were just getting paid by the CIA to do this. And with enough time and money, they create an atmosphere of chaos and hostility and distrust among the public. Oh, and there's weapons. The CIA stashes enough weapons and explosives to support a, quote, 10,000-man guerrilla organization for 6 months, like just in case they need to, like, start a full-on conflict. The result of all of this is more violence and chaos that engulfs the capital. Shops are being destroyed, bullets are flying into mosques, people are beaten, and thousands of paid demonstrators flood the street. The city falls into anarchy, all of it orchestrated by CIA money. And in the end, this all results in a bloody shootout at Mossadegh's house. He eventually gives up and turns himself in. He's put through a sham trial and found guilty of treason and sentenced to 3 years in solitary confinement and then house arrest, where he stayed until his death. The previous ruler of Iran, Mohammad Reza Shah, which just means king, had fled the country. But now, with the democratically elected Mossadegh gone, and with the backing of the US and UK, he could charter a flight back into Iran and take control.
Shah crowns himself in a tradition which goes back 25 centuries. His title is King of Kings, and he becomes Emperor of his nation.
The US really came out on top here. They got what they wanted. They now have an American-friendly dictator in a powerful country in the Middle East, who is now welcoming American oil companies to get in on one of the largest oil reserves on Earth. Under the Shah, Iran becomes a brutal police state. He executed military officers, student leaders, anyone associated with Mossadegh. He set up a secret police force, and life was brutal. So brutal that in 1979, the frustration of Iranians burst forth in mass protests that ran the Shah out of office and replaced him with an inspiring new leader who would turn Iran into an Islamic republic, built in part off a foundation of resentment for the US having meddled in their country. The Islamic Republic has held power ever since and has morphed into the oppressive theocracy we know today, though maybe not for long. Before we go on, a quick reminder that all of these coups, these plans to overthrow leaders in other countries, did not require American votes or consensus or approval of Congress. It was usually just a few key men in government buildings in Washington, D.C. making this happen. These people would go on to define the Cold War and shape so many covert operations around the world that many of which we'll never know about.
Yeah, and the next video is about kind of same events, but this time in Afghanistan. So how basically Taliban is created by US.
And are meeting resistance from a bunch of fighters from all over the world who have come to Afghanistan to fight back against the Soviet occupation, many of them with fundamentalist religious motivations. But the US doesn't care about their motivation. They just care that they're willing to fight against the Soviets and the Soviets' puppet, the Afghan president. And it totally works. With the help of the US, these fighters push the Soviets back and successfully run the Afghan president out of office. And as he's being run out of office, he forebodingly warns the Americans that if they leave Afghanistan in the hands of these fighters, that it would, quote, be turned into a center for terrorism. And his prophecy was completely fulfilled. Those US-funded fighters were people whose names we know today. Osama bin Laden, Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, the guy who started the group that would eventually become ISIS. Those same weapons that the US sent to counter the Soviets and to effect regime change in Afghanistan would go on to be used against American soldiers years later, when the US was back, orchestrating yet another regime change after 9/11, against the very groups they once enabled. The US would eventually leave Afghanistan, only to find the country immediately falling back into Taliban rule.
Yeah, so I don't know, what do you think about that? Sometimes we think we are living in a world with rules and we know what's going on, but maybe not exactly. So in the end, we want to sum up with just giving you some briefing about what's going on at the moment. So just like giving you the message that revolution is still alive and it's running. So people are still resisting all the oppressive structures and they can just write no on a paper and that's already a political move. They can hold a figure and that's already a political move. So it's still running and each funeral turns to a whole big demonstration, a space to fear the government just by going to a funeral. And the government would arrest the families of the killed people, and there is like still lots of also... Anna? Yeah, but...
This doesn't work. Yeah, it works. The teachers are still organizing. The pensioners, every week they go out. The workers are going to strike. I don't know. The Baluchis every Friday are still in the street. Art schools, wow. Like this revolution happened. All universities are bubbling, but art schools are like specifically showing a big no to the system. Just like last week, something new came out of them.
So all in all, like what we are trying to say with this video, for example, is that Iranian revolution would not need support from Western countries. What it needs is basically them not to interfere, not to feed the more right, liberal oppositions, and basically just not to deal with Iran as... Recently, UN gave again a chair to Islamic Republic. Like, how contradictory is that? How unacceptable is that? Or exchanging the prisoners have been started between Belgium and Iran again. US is talking about starting new nuclear deals. So what people from Iran need is basically not Western countries to support it, but it's just to stop dealing with this country, accepting this country is expired, this government is expired. Yes, and I think we can open the Q&A if there is time.
And thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, now it's working. Sorry.
Thank you very much for the presentation. It was really awesome how you covered the history and stuff. The only thing I wanted, it's not really a question, it's more like a suggestion for the oppressions, like the etc. thing, because we usually don't talk about Afghan migrants and how they're oppressed in the country, not only by the government, but also like it's a division between the countries. So I think it's worth to be talked about because we usually don't cover this. And that's the only thing I wanted to add to this awesome presentation.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for that point because there were so many points that were missing in that presentation. I mean, it's the oppression is so massive, but.
Just one line to highlight, underline what you said is that there are cities, like the whole city with the banner at the entrance of the city, no immigrant is allowed to the city. There are parks, no immigrant is allowed in the park. And by that they mean Afghans. So thank you.
Hi, my name is Kayvan. I'm happy to be here. I just want to say that 3 months ago I was in Iran. My cousin were in jail because participating on demonstration protest in Iran. Many of young generations are in the street, bloodshed, executed, hanged. Mullah's regime are putting a lot of pressure, financial wise, freedom, in all aspects in people's lives. And just imagine, just close your eyes 1 second and imagine after Fusion Festival, you want to go back home and you are afraid of going back home because you were in Fusion Festival. This is a thing happening in Iran. People are coming here as an artist, participating on Fusion Festival, having programs like Nesa Azadi Khah and Sanaz. Tomorrow night they have program. They are part of the Iranian resistance and women music producers. Please support them, please support them, please support them. These are people that they are connected to underground of Tehran, of deep house music of Tehran. We have great artists, great culture there, and they are looking for some stages, some great events to just show their performances, show their capabilities, show their all of their arts, emotion, whatever you can see here in Fusion Festival. I might cause some misleading or something in the festival. I'm sorry for that. But overall, thanks. This was the best part of the Fusion Festival for me. I really appreciate your effort, and that was a great chance to be here. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation. I wanted to ask you, as experts of your country, about the Jewish community in Iran and the approach of Israel to offer money for Jewish citizens in Iran to move to Israel. Do you know something about that? Can you tell something about that?
Short answer, no. Long answer, my family is Jewish. I'm not. My family is Jewish. I was in Israel. And in Israel, a lot of Iranian Jews are there. And I was watching a documentary, so not my information, information that I got from the documentary. A lot of them, like everywhere else in the world, they were offered that they for Aliyah, they can go back. They can go back if they want. And especially after revolution and the oppression, a lot of them did. A lot of them, in the interviews, said, this is home, pointing to Haifa, or pointing to Tel Aviv. And some of them were like, no, I still miss the streets of Isfahan, blah, 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 blah. Or and some of them were like, you know, this is the part that I just got from, like, you know. But personally, I don't know the answer.
Hi, thank you for your presentation. I have one question. You made a great point when you talked about coup d'etats, when you were saying that just changing a regime doesn't change the fundamental culture and political situation in this place. So right now we have a situation where we go to protest here to support the Iranians inside Iran. We face the problem that we have to go hand in hand with actual monarchists. We have to go hand in hand with people who would use sexist and rape culture words in their slogans just because it rhymes. And it really goes against the fundamentals that we believe in with women, life, freedom. And we always are confronted with, now we are just all against the oppressors. Now we are all against the fascists. Now we are all against the government. Let's deal with it later. And they try to push it out. And it's just sometimes impossible. And it leads to conflict within the groups outside. And it's really getting difficult to get your head around that. How are we going to deal with this whole mess? Get everybody under the banner. We don't want to, I don't know, sully the rights of people who believe in a king. Anybody can believe in anything they want to. But then there is these lines where we just cannot deny. And how would you suggest we go about that when we organize, when we go to protest, when somebody is saying a slogan that is, I don't know, against the queer community, is against women, it's against freedom in itself. How do we deal with that on the spot? I really need some guidance on that because just, yeah, I could just explode, but I don't want to ruin a whole movement, and I don't know what to do. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, because it's a curious case for us too. So, like, as I pointed out, the opposition is one of the concerns of the activists generally, because there is now, like, there were not much loud sound, and now suddenly there are like this spectrum of like far right to far left, and they are kind of sometimes clashing. And I know what you mean, like they are basically liberal right wing opposition also living abroad, and they have very big flags. I know what you're talking about. I can just give you my personal idea. I think it's about taking space. So if you are more left, you should also take more space, if that's the way to go. So because once big time left scene of Iran was pushed under the rug, murdered, or still people in Iran have like a scary idea of leftists. They are like communism, you know, like and yeah, just taking more space. And these days also there are lots of more left activists that they are uniting, and they are just like making this bigger network, and they're calling for just joining and getting bigger and bigger. So for example, it was 24th of this month that a demo was organized only by left Democrat activist groups. So more is coming.
Maybe one word, like, do you mention, like, let's put it like this, democracy needs diversity. but we've heard for 40 years, it's not time for that. It's not time to fight the hijab. Now is not time to talk about the queers. I don't care what you do in your bed. Now it's not time. It's not political enough. For the diversity part of the democracy of the demo, sure. But for the fascistic part, Solidarität heißt Widerstand. Kampf der Faschismus in jedem Land. Man, I cannot take Faschismus. It's personal.
So I would also like to start by thanking you for this nice presentation. For Iranian growing up in Europe, some of the historical aspects are really interesting because you don't learn them obviously in school here. I would like to ask you a question regarding sanctions, because I would totally agree with you when you're saying we don't need foreign interventions, and I think it's one of the most important pillars of the stability of the Islamic regime is that they can point to Iraq and Afghanistan and say, look how foreign intervention ruined the country there. But what do you think? Do we need more sanctions from the West? Because I've seen it in Iran that the sanctions usually don't hit the regime, don't hit the rich people. They hit ordinary people, the health system, their social system. I know it's a difficult question, but what is your opinion about that?
You apparently know that there are different ideas on that, but I think it's not bad that there are sanctions. Of course, the sanctions go directly to the dining table of people and not to the rich people's pockets, unfortunately. So people are getting poorer and poorer, and the rich are not bothered. That's true. But still, sanctions being there at least are symbolically showing something. So important is that they don't lift the sanctions. And also there are like huge amount of deals still going on with like different ways. So just as you said, sanctions are not, I would turn it to this, that sanctions are not enough. They should be there, but they're not enough. So like there are different suggestions that what Western countries could do. We can also send out a handout about it. But there are different suggestions like closing down the embassies or not having the ambassadors as a eligible person in the politic, not to know it as the ambassador of Iran. Do you have anything to add for the sanctions?
Not add, but because you ask personally what we think. It's a very hot question. It's a very difficult question. If you asked me yesterday, I might have a different answer than today. It is a hard question. So first of all, I want to appreciate that I learned two things during the revolution. The first thing is that revolution showed us that everything is in becoming. Revolution showed us that everything is in becoming. It's a performative thing. Revolution is a performative thing. It is in happening. So what is my stand on the sanction depends on the context. That is one thing that I feel deep down every day when I wake up that I wanted to share with you. So it's a difficult question. And the second thing I forgot, so leave it.
Thank you for the answer. I just wanted to mention, since we're talking about oppressed groups in Iran, and I want to, and people we might have forgotten, I want to mention that, at least in my opinion, the people who have it the hardest, who are doing the hardest jobs, who have the most racism towards them, are the Afghani refugees. That's what I at least experienced when I was living in Iran, and even people I love and in my family are having normal people absolutely hatred and racism against poor Afghani people who just fled the war and living in Iran, working the hardest jobs. We might have want to mention them as well.
Thank you for the presentation, first of all. I do have a question, and it relates to some artists, or let's say feminist artists in Germany or in Europe. The first time I was in a concert, and the singer started saying, "Women lie freedom." I was thinking, should I keep going? Should I say it? Because as a person from the Middle East who stands somewhere else in this world and said freedom on the street, I know the difference between saying freedom there and here. And I was like, okay, like maybe they're getting more audience or getting popular because of the sentence. So, but I did not get an answer for that. So that's why, what do you think, guys, about that?
Do you have something?
So it's a sensitive topic. One thing, it's also a very personal opinion, right? So one thing that for me personally is important is that as much as this thing is spread, I would appreciate it because I know what kind of filtering, what kind of censoring people are facing in Iran. And for each post that they post, like they spend much more time because internet is much slower. So whatever the word comes out from Zhenjian Azadi, Zan Zendegi Azadi, woman life freedom, in my opinion, that's not enough. It can be even more wherever it happens, even if it's in context or not. Unless it's like something totally non-relevant, I understand. But otherwise, I think as much as it's spread, I would appreciate it. Yeah.
I don't know, 2018 or something was working for, spread some news for DiEM25. I was chanting in the street, "One solution, revolution, regardless of the Iran, that is who I am." And of course, anarchism, socialism, feminism, and green. These are the things that happened in my head. Zhenjian Azadi manifested that for me. So I just underlined what she said. Regardless of the fact that I lived under this fascism, regardless of the fact that this is my real concern, this is my country, my daughter cannot go see my country because of the fascism, regardless of that, still as a revolutionary, like for me these three words is on the level of the liberté, fraternité, you know, like that level of richness plus the progressive last 200 years of the world history. So, yes, I will underline that, spread it. Zhenjian Azadi.
Do we have time for one question?
Yeah, one.
One. I think it's really interesting what's happening now with Iran, because women has been suppressed for a long time. And you have this skin on the skin, you know, thing. And the most important is how a free woman from Iran will look like in the future, when this decaying fascism will kind of like finally break away. So where do you think women in Iran is getting inspiration? They see the West, women in the West, they see a woman in the Middle East, or how will, for you, a free woman, kind of like when finally the cocoon breaks out, how would be like a woman, a freedom, a woman freedom in Iran look like? What do you think is the ideas coming from that's gonna?
I think it's coming from Prem because we experienced something. And it developed to something out. It needs to get out. That's the reason actually people rise up, because they are suffering and they you know, this lack of freedom make them stronger, so they rise up against it. They don't need to look out west or east for inspiration. They just need to look inside themselves and then a little bit.
I think time is over.
Yeah.
Or is there something that needs to be said urgently now, then quick? No.
Thank you one more time.
Thank you, Women Life Freedom.
Thank you.